are sporadically these little radio shows you keep hearing about. You know, every now and then you'll hear somebody, like we were just up in this past year, up to see this group called the Little Country Trio. And this woman has one of the best voices I've heard, and she's not known anywhere, hardly except in the, they do gospel music. And they do a little radio show up there. And so here and there, there's some, I think, around maybe Johnson City and different little places like that. But I guess probably after the 50s and 60s, somewhere along in there. But they used to have live shows on radio all the time. I mean, some of my earliest memories, when I was very, very small, you woke up in the morning with the radio blasting you out of the house. My father couldn't stand it down. He turned it as loud as he could, and I can, you know, just, I get this memory of just looking out the fog all over the mountains, you know, and this radio blasting your ears off. Just the early morning radio shows, all the old trios, whatever. I mean, they came on very, very early.
What time did he turn on?
He turned on as soon as he got out of bed. You know, it's probably get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Like, just like memorized.
Yeah. And always listened to, of course, to the Grand Ole Opry. Grew up on that. But usually there were neighbors or somebody around that played and sang. And, of course, always the church people that sang. And that was the beginning of us learning, because a lot of these people would always come back home with you. If you invited somebody home for a chicken dinner, they didn't turn it down, especially the preachers. And they'd come back and sit in the front room and sing, open up the books and sing and talk. And so that was the beginning of my learning to sing.
That was primarily a coal mining community, though, wasn't it? Was there any music at all that you heard that was related in any way to coal mining or coal mining issues?
I don't remember. In the beginning, I don't remember the...
folk music, not recorded music, but any music. People in your family or other neighbors had written about the experience of coal mining.
No, in the early days, I don't remember that so much. I'm sure that there must have been, because any of the events that happened, like train wrecks or anything, people would write about it. But I don't, you know, remember any specifically myself.
In the 20s, and even before that, there must have been many dozens of IWW.
Yeah.
Songbooks that came into the mountains.
That's right.
With organizers into the coal fields. But those were not absorbed, that I can find out, by the rank and file. Those did not enter the folk music repertoire, mm-hmm. did they?
They didn't. But the funny part is they did like any of the old raunchy tunes that talked about working people, you know, or anything that anybody come up with. They liked it. I mean, that's the thing about it. See, I think a lot more could have been done than was done with the music in that respect, you know, like political music.
I remember in 66 when Merle Haggard came out with My Mother's Hungry Eyes.
Yes, it's a gorgeous
song. People loved that.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Bobby Gentry's song. The image of a sharecropping family.
Mm-hmm.
People really liked that song a lot.
Yeah, I thought after I started writing, like the first couple of things that I wrote was maybe a hymn and just a love song that really didn't say very much. It was sort of, I was afraid to go too far afield with anything, so I was trying to keep it within the boundaries. And but after I started getting raunchy and writing stuff, you know, like Black Lung and Don't Put Her Down, You Help Put Her There, I was almost afraid to take my records home. And because my father was the critical one, because he was the one of the musical ones in the family. He had a fantastic voice and was an old-time banjo picker in the beginning until he got religion, and then he wouldn't do anything with it. He wouldn't even play. And so I said, well, what the heck, you know, this is what I'm about. So I'll blast him with a few of these records, you know. And I didn't, he actually liked them. And the ones that he taped off to send to people, he got him a couple little cassettes and recorders, and he would tape off stuff, some of his preaching, some of the singing, you know, and he taped the church, and he put in Hazel Dickens stuff in there too. And it was always Don't Put Her Down, Black Lung, Pretty Bird, you know, some of the songs like that.
He liked that.
He liked that, the high pitched stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where you go up, any of the stuff that had that.
Did you ever discuss the content of those with him?
I pinned him down one day, and because I thought, well, by God, I'm just not going to let this go. This man's going to die out one of these days, and I'm never going to know, you know, and I don't want to worry about it. You know, what was it he liked? And I said, you do understand what that song says, don't you? And he said, oh, yeah, that's why I like it. Said, you really told him off, didn't you? It said, it takes you to tell him, Hazel. And he did understand Black Lung and liked it, and he did discuss about the working people and about how they were done and how, you know. And when Nixon got in, it was so good. When he was elected, I called him up long distance, and I said, well, I want to know what you think about this. I want to know what you think about this. This is what's happened up there in Washington. And he said, I just think it's a chip off the old block. That's all I think. And he just started ranting and raving about Nixon. He really didn't like him at all. And I didn't put anything in his head at all. I just wanted to know, you know, what he thought. He said, it's just a chip off the old block. He says, nothing different.
None of these issues were allowed to creep into religious mm-hmm. music.
No. Nope. No, not at all.
That must have caused his head to split when he, you know, tried to fit all that into one head. You know,
he was extremely torn. He was, now talk about split. I mean, if ever I saw anybody that was split right down the middle, that he was. In the later years, when he got too old to go out much and was crippled and all this stuff, my brother got the idea if he would take the old banjo back to him and sit there and try to, you know, play with him and leave it, just leave it. And he got so condemned about it, he put it in the closet until my brother could come and get it. And told my brother come and take it out of the house. He did the same thing about he did a couple of songs on the Folkways record. Mike Seeger recorded it. And he hadn't touched the banjo in 30 years. And he wanted to hear it. So I went and bought him a Folkways records, and you know they're not cheap. And took it to him, and he started feeling so condemned by it. He was so proud of it. It was incredible how proud. But he felt so condemned about it, he scratched the record up and threw it in the garbage. Wow. Then he got to wanting to hear it again. And I would
support this habit just so long.
And I would buy him another one, take it back to him. I was going to buy him as long as my money held out and as long as his desire was there. So I would take him another one. And the next time he wasn't as severe, when he got to feeling so condemned about it that time that he couldn't have it in the house, he gave it to a nephew. So this went on until he died.
Some kind of religious?
Religious hang-up, yeah. And the church, you see, the church is very primitive. It's called Primitive Baptist, or the old regular Baptist, but his was the primitive. And he was a minister in that church. But they were not supposed to have anything to do with any worldly thing. And going to movies or, you know, having anything to do with...
No instruments.
they didn't have any instruments in the church. It was all a cappella.
No dancing?
No dancing. I would go through the house sometimes skipping and dancing and singing one of the popular songs. He'd make me stop. So we'd have to slip out in the back room and lock the door to dance, or we'd go to a neighbor's house that had a square dance or something and not tell them.
Did they get happy and dance in the church?
Not that one. They would get happy, but it was mostly it was like a chant almost. It was not like the holy rollers who dance around or, rolling floor.
When they were singing, was there any harmony in that, or drums?
Sometime, but it was usually all in unison. If somebody wanted to, they were free to do it, but what was so beautiful a lot of times was that the women would sing sometime in falsetto, like high, very, very high. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. They would be way up there, and then the other voices would be down here, and it was gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. And so it sounded like harmony, even though there wasn't.
And also, the notes that you're having at the beginning and end of the note kind of fill in all the harmonies around them.
Mm-hmm.
It's real feathery.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a bunch of people singing to you.
I visited a church way out on the tip of an island in the Hebrides this fall.
Oh, yeah.
in Scotland. And turn my back. And heard him singing the Psalms out there, and it's the same. It must be the forerunner of it.
Really, that's great. Where was it?
Beautiful. It was on the Isle of Lewis, way out on the tip of the Isle of Lewis, and in a church there. And they sang these Psalms, and they had a man stand up in the pulpit and line them out, sing the line out part.
All in,
and then everybody would come in. It would sound just like an old regular Baptist church.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, my father always.
Except it didn't have that kind of bluesy.
It didn't.
It did not have that kind of bluesy. It was a real pure, real high.
Yeah.
But it was in unison, but everybody wouldn't top over just at the same time, uh-huh. It was the same. Uh-huh. And so you get that feathery kind of harmony, as the voices went up and down. I'll play you a recording of it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
But I was really moved after hearing singing in down in that section where you're from, and you always wonder where a style like that would have come from, because it's so different than anything else.
Yeah, there was a woman that lived on the next farm from us whenever we moved out of the mining camp. My father started doing sharecropping, and she lived over the hill on the next farm. Her name was Ady Compton, they called her, and she had one of those high, pure voices, and you could hear her above the whole church when she was singing in church. And they didn't like it when she didn't come because they didn't get that same piercing sound.
A really nice tradition that you alluded to a while ago that you find in those churches is that everybody has a psalm for which they're known. And that song will identify them even years and years after they've died. Phyllis and Nimrod, whenever you would mention a song, Phyllis and Nimrod would say, well, that was Aunt So-and-so's song.
Yeah.
Or that was my daddy's
song.
And as long as you live, that would be your daddy's song. Mm-hmm. Dead. Was that that way?
That's why I did that first one like that. They said that my mother's mother, every time that they would get together, she'd have them sing her song, and that was her song. And so my father got in a little bad with them every now and then if he hit the moonshine a little too heavy. And he was trying to get in the family, and they didn't want them to get married. They'd get together to sing. All he'd have to do to win her over would be sing that song. She'd think he was all right.
Do you remember any of the... him mention any of the songs that he sang before he got saved? Do you know what any of those were?
He did art like stuff like Arkansas Traveler and a lot of stuff like that. He used to get the banjo down even after he got religion, and he would do them in fun. But you know, he wouldn't do them seriously. So there was a lot of stuff that he knew that he wouldn't sing to us after he got religion. So before that, I just wasn't interested enough to actually pin him down about it. But I was really sorry about that, because there was two or three that Mike had mentioned that he talked to him about that Mike never had heard before. Like a train song called Switchback Old Number 9 or something like that.
You don't know that one?
Really sorry about that. The one that he gave me the idea for was Cowboy Jim, and we talked about it, and you know, and then he went ahead and says, you know, why don't you take the idea and take the line and all like that. And, when we got up, by the time we got up, he had joined the church real early, and he just wouldn't do any of those songs. It's just crazy. The whole tradition there.
Well, it's nice that Hazel came along and made up for all the generations that didn't have songs related to work and related to life in this world. And some of those are practically folk songs now. They've entered into the tradition. Everybody has sung them and loves them. And of course, your name will always be associated with them, I'm sure. But they're sung like folk songs. Would you do that Clay County Minor? Because that was one of the first ones I remember.
I was thinking a little bit of
or something you want.
Count if I can. Have had the virus for about 2 weeks, and today, last night and today, I sort of started feeling like it might be coming back again. So I'm not sure.
Vitamins.
Yeah, I've been taking C's like they're going out of style. I used to hear my mother sing this around the kitchen, but I don't think I'll sing all of it. I probably won't remember it. I will another day. Just before, oh, see, that's not the same. Hug me closer, closer, mother. Put your arms around me tight, for I'm cold and tired, mother. Something hurts me here, dear mother, like a stone upon my breast. And I wonder, mother, oh, why it is I cannot rest. All the day while you were as I lay up on my bed, I was trying to be patient and to think of all you'd said, how the King blessed Jesus likes his land to watch and keep. I was going when you called me, when I was falling asleep. All at once the window opened on a field of lamb and sheep. Some far out in the brook were drinking. all at once the window opened, one so bright upon me smiled, and I knew it must be Jesus when he said, come here, my child. Oh, come up here, my little Bessie. Come up here and live with me, where little children never suffer, suffer through eternity. At the solemn hour of midnight, in the darkness calm and deep, laying on her mother's bosom, oh, little Bessie fell asleep.
I think that's all I've ever seen of that.
It's another verse or two in it about the mother holding her closer and all that kind of stuff. So, but I'll try to do it later on in the week when I bone up on the words and when I get a little bit in better throat.
I've never heard you talk much about your mother. She was pretty. She was a no nonsense kind of a person.
Yeah, she was what you call a straight ahead woman. She was. Absolutely no nonsense, no frills, no pretense, no put on, no nothing. She wore her hair back in a bun, no makeup. She lived her life for her family and her husband and her home, and never did any outside work outside of the house. As far as I know, she. Don't believe that she ever went to a movie. She may have gone in and out like one time to somebody just to show her, but I don't remember it. And as far as I know, I don't think she ever read the newspaper. I never did see her read a book or anything like that.
About TV?
She later on in years she loved TV. There was so many things about her that we started to assume that could have been for her, but wasn't, you know. And she loved to watch the people dancing on TV. And if she saw somebody that looked like me, she would say, oh, there's Hazel. And she just assumed that because they were singing that it was her daughter, because her daughter sang. And this was when she got, you know, much older. But she lived her entire life just to take care of her 11 children. She had 11 and one miss, and that was a full-time job.
Now, when you were singing just now, were you trying to reproduce the way she sang it?
Yeah, but she didn't sing. She wouldn't let anybody hear her. I'd see her singing in church, but she was very shy.
Oh. So she didn't sing that around the kitchen or something?
She would sing, I could hear her singing around the kitchen, you know, that kind of thing. But she wouldn't let anybody,
She never performed.
No, and she wouldn't let anybody hear if she thought seriously that they were listening to her.
Even the kids?
No. And, you know, she'd be singing around when she was working, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, she was very shy about it. No, my father would sing at the drop of a hat. Or talk, or you couldn't. Well, in fact, you couldn't get a word in edgewise. And he was like that. He should have been on the stage. He would have been a very fantastic performer. And maybe that's why he went into preaching, because he could justify that. Anyway, I never knew the kind of spunk, you know, that she actually did have. But I know that she pulled many of her kids through that would not have lived. And me and my sister. She saved both of us. And my one sister was like a, you know, a teeny little doll when she was born, and there was an incubator, so she put her in somehow a shoebox and heated the oven and put her on the oven door to save her. And she saved me. They gave me up when I was 3 months old, and I'm not sure exactly what was wrong with me, but they really didn't know. And so it was a combination of maybe I looked like a blue baby, sort of, and was very, very skinny, very, very thin, and couldn't keep anything down, like milk or anything. And so she wouldn't give up. She was, that's the kind of person she was. She carried me off of the mountain, caught the train. Everybody told her she was crazy that I'd die before she got me there. Carried me into the next town where she heard there was a baby doctor she'd never met. She just heard he was there. Looked him up and said, told him what was wrong with everything, that I couldn't keep anything. He said, well, I don't know what to do. The only thing I know to do is give her, mince up some crackers and give her crackers. And that's how she saved me. She would poke these little bites of crackers down and till I got so I could take milk. And she did this for several members of her family and her grandchildren. So she was some kind of trooper. She also told me later on that she could take a gun and go, you know, tree a rabbit or something, like if a dog had treed a rabbit or squirrel or something. And my father wasn't there to go get it. She'd just take the gun and go up with the dog and get it. Shoot it and bring it back. Stuff like that. She was a real mountain woman.
How old was she when she got married?
When she got married? I think she was still in her teens. And she was still having children when she was going through menopause.
Have any of your brothers and sisters also, did any of them sing actively as well?
Not professionally, but they
I don't mean that.
Yeah, they all, almost everyone. There's maybe out of the 11 I can think of, I can't think of anyone that actually could not carry a tune, but there were a couple of them that didn't play instruments very well, but even those could actually sing. So they were actually, I can remember three members of my family that played a lot of different instruments, you know, like anything that they wanted to play. I was never an instrument person myself. I'm mostly liked singing. I never really got involved with an instrument very much. But
before we leave your mother, I wanted to ask about all this gifts you got for healing children. Did she have any knowledge of herbal medicine?
She had her own little potions and stuff, but it was not like Molly Workman.
No. Did she go to the mountain and dig herbs out?
No, I don't think so. But she had her kitty, all like catnip tea and mustard poultices that she would put on your breast, you know, or stuff. But she, not to the extent that Molly was, but they had their own little things that they would do.
Hazel, exactly where did they live? I didn't catch that.
Mercer County, West Virginia.
In West Virginia.
They weren't born there. She was
no,
born
but
there.
I mean, when
yeah.
you were growing
when
up.
They,
there,
yeah.
Would you give us one more song before we leave? Are you getting hoarse?
I'm not sure what it is. It's psychological or in my head or what. Is there anything in particular you can think of that it would be better to cover than another thing?
Oh, no, I think these old ones. Any of these old songs would come to your mind.
Do you want to sing one together?
Yeah. We'll try.
Yeah, I think that would be more. I don't know. I can think of something. I wrote this song for a bunch of miners who were unemployed, disabled, broke down. I had been asked to come to Horse Creek, Kentucky to sing Black Lung, specifically for that occasion. It was the first time that I was ever actually invited out to sing to a political crowd. We say political, it means different things to different people. And these were just people who were kind of trying to stand up for their rights.
This was at a hearing, wasn't it?
It was a hearing, a mock trial. Why don't you tell a little bit about it, too? I mean, you were there.
I was there,
and
yeah.
I'll tell my end of it.
Well, it was a hearing at which old miners were encouraged to testify about their own physical condition. Mm-hmm. And to tell how many years they worked in the coal mines. And this was in 1967, I believe. And at that time, Black Lung was a term used only by coal miners. The bosses didn't use it, didn't recognize it as an ailment, as a condition. It had been compensated in the British Isles since 1931, but was unrecognized in this country. And so this song had a tremendous impact on people's consciousness about that whole issue. There's been some other good Black Lung songs, but Hazel's written the two most useful songs about that, I think. And it gave us a lot of ammunition later on in some subsequent hearings, because we would stand up and sing these songs right in the middle of the day on hearings, and there'd be all these commissioners there, health commissioners and upper-level bureaucrats and politicos there, you know. And the song just stops everybody in their tracks. It doesn't matter what else is going on.
It actually got on the Walter Cronkite show. They did a thing called a 7-minute segment on Black Lung, and they used part of that. Also, when they were doing that thing in New York, remember, at the Waldorf, the Academy of Sciences hold their annual conference, it is, up there, and they were doing it. Doctors come from all over the world, and they had not invited this doctor from West Virginia, Beckley, Dr. Rasmussen, who had studied Black Lung and the issue all for 12 years.
He was treating them.
And was treating the miners firsthand. He had learned this information. They didn't ask him to speak. They invited him, but didn't ask him to speak. So, of course, all the political people down here were up in arms. So this woman, Maxine Kinney, and I don't know, a bunch of other people, Mike, I guess, was part of that, and who else, I don't know, a whole bunch of people, decided that they weren't going to sit down and have this just handed to them like that, and they were going to rise up and do something about it. So they got organized this whole group of miners, and they got busloads to go to New York. And then they called and asked me and Mike and a bunch of us to come, and they were going to have a rally afterwards. They were going to storm the Waldorf with all these miners and then go and sing at the Washington Square Church. So Maxine called me up and said, you know, there's going to be a lot of action up there. Said, you might want to see some of that. Might want to come up ahead of time and not just come to the singing thing. And I said, what's going on? And she told me, I said, Lord, yeah, I want to see that. So I went up 2 days ahead of time, and me and her were going to meet everybody at that, what's that place, that's the big cafeteria up there where you hog and had it. But anyway, it's everybody was supposed to meet there. They had miners and busloads of miners come up there. And we're supposed to meet at this one place, and then all of us walk over there. The miners were so excited about it that they wouldn't wait. They just went on over there themselves. They wouldn't even meet us for coffee or nothing. We got there, and the meeting was in full swing. So all of a sudden, all the miners just filed into this room, and they just went all the way around, standing like they would be standing around this plate glass window, all the way around. And then everybody just started, you know, they didn't, what in the world, if they got scared, they didn't know what was going, if they were going to attack them or what, you know. And somebody says, went to one of the speakers and said, well, you know, we want to the floor for 15 minutes, or we want to speak, we want to be heard. And they talked, they had a conference, and they said, we'll give you the floor for 15 minutes. And then when they elected this one person to speak, it was that old retired miner, remembers walking on a cane, he's dead now, he had black lung, couldn't get his benefits. So they let him speak, and when he got done, he handed it to the next one, and the next one handed it to the next, didn't get the microphone back for a long time. And they had all of the media was there, from everyone, NBC, CBS, all the every newspaper you could think of, and they weren't talking to the doctors, they were talking, this is the biggest thing that had happened, the biggest news event, and it was widely covered. And anyway, that was, song was written for some of that, but this one came out of just meeting these people face to face, and it was a real traumatic experience for me. And this is not Black Lung, but Clay County Miner, who I wrote for them. He won't help. He's a poor man, cause mining's all he's known. But miners don't get rich, loading coal. He's a sick man, cause it cold does took his stand. But he don't.
Goodbye, old time.
Several different directions here, but we were just playing it by ear.
It doesn't matter. It's great.
It can go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can go in any direction that people want it to. I think starting out, sometimes it starts out a little slow because you need to get acquainted and sort of get some of the roots established, some of the basic things.
So this is now suddenly going to turn into a class in harmony singing.
Thank you. Oh, was it that time?
Was it terrible? I get here.
You want to go and take a stretch?
Much more encouragement from other people than I ever get for myself. I have several friends who are constantly kicking me.
Yeah, there's a restroom running
dump. You know, the truth is, I'm just dumb. You're not from the Washington area.
I'll get you
Oh, you are? Okay. Do you belong to the Folklore Society?
Not now.
I've been planning to try and start going to the gospel sing that they have, and I think I'm just going to do it. I know, and
you do it in the group, and you do it in the group, and all of a sudden you realize,
I grew up in a family where there was no music. And I know, it happens. Well, and actually, my mother was musically inclined, and just never did it because my father doesn't like music.
And my dad had no ear for music. He was never particularly interested in it.
Yeah.
But my mother loved it.
No, I'm through.